Hi, I'm Notre Dame safety Kyle Hamilton, and you're listening to Single High, a Notre Dame football podcast from UHND.com, the official home of the Kyle Hamilton Fan Club.
Back to throw, Meyer. Looks, rolls to the right. Pump fake, throws the ball. It is caught, Reggie Brooks! Reggie Brooks got it!
Downfield, and Hamilton again, coming over from that safety position and making the interception.
DB's on the field, the Sherron Jones throws.
To go almost 20 yards.
Ishmael down around the 5-yard line. The kick will come down and Ragib will take it. Takes it at the 12, 15, 20, 25. He's at the 30. Afterburners are on. He's gone.
That is the All-American Kyle Hamilton. His sixth career interception.
40, 45, 50. Down the sideline. At the 35. Or right to the goal line. At the 10. The 5. A touchdown.
Here are your hosts, Frank Vitovich and Greg Flamont.
Welcome back to another edition of Single High, Notre Dame football podcast from UHND.com. Coming to you just the day before Notre Dame is set to kick off against Tennessee State in the 2023 Notre Dame home opener. I'm coming to you solo today because unfortunately schedules did not align for Greg and I. We had a very small window of time that was going to work this week. And you know what? Things fell through. We have our little guy here at home all week because our daycare is closed. We were supposed to have sitters come over throughout the week to help us out so we can get work done, you know, during the day so I could have time at night. And unfortunately, sitters flake out sometimes, and thus I spent that brief window of time that Greg and I had actually getting some real work for my day job done. So you're going to just have me for the next, I don't know, 45 minutes, maybe an hour. We'll see how long I can talk. Not going to lie to y'all, a week of no childcare has me a little on the sleepy side, and it has also given me a newfound appreciation for all of you parents out there who had young children in the months of March, April, May, June, July 2020 when everything was shut down and you all had your kids at home while you were trying to work from home. My little guy was not born yet at that point. I didn't experience it. I've experienced it this week, and y'all deserve a medal, for making it through that, because it has been a challenge. On that note, it has been a challenge, and with challenges come rewards. There's the opening of the beer. For this evening, I have a double hazy IPA called Dad Nap. Felt very fitting given how I'm feeling right now, from Weldworks Brewery in Colorado. So I'm going to drink this while we're potting tonight. Might be a few more pauses than normal, because normally, you know, when I kick it over to Greg is when I slam it down. But we're going to get first, let's see how this one tastes. You know what? That is pretty good. It has been in the refrigerator, you know, for a while. I saw the brewed on date is actually from May. For those of you who don't drink a lot of IPAs, IPAs do not age that well. So, but this one is still pretty good, even though it's over 3 months old. So, with that, let's get into the week of Notre Dame football, where we're at. Haven't spoken to you all since before the Navy game, so obviously a lot happened then. We'll touch briefly on the Tennessee State game. We also got a bunch of questions that I'm going to go through because you all asked them. I'm going to answer them, even though, you know, some probably more intended for Greg. But guess what? Hey, we, in the words of the immortal Dominic Toretto in the Fast and Furious series, we improvise. So let's just jump in. Let's talk a little bit about my thoughts, on Navy. I threw a few articles up on the site, things I like, things I didn't like. So you take a look at those if you haven't. But overall, there was not a whole lot to dislike from a game like that. Notre Dame winning 42-3. It was not one of those stupid, frustratingly close Navy games like we had, last year. We didn't think that's what we were going to get. You know, when Greg and I spoke last week, you know, neither one of us really thought it would be that kind of game. I don't know if any of us, you know, I don't know if we necessarily saw Notre Dame shutting Navy down as much as they did. Defense did get a little bit lucky, you know, early on with Navy missing some opportunities. And, you know, Navy is the kind of team that if they miss their opportunity early, it's an uphill battle, because they blinked and they were down 21-0. And there's not a team that's generally going to be able to come back from that, unless it's last year when Tommy Rees forgot how to call offensive plays and Notre Dame couldn't score in the second half. But I digress. Of the things to really like, from that, I think obviously you want to look at the receivers, played great, getting a lot of production out of younger receivers without a lot of snaps, was huge. Was actually shocked when I looked at the snap counts after the game and saw that great Jaden Greathouse only played 8 snaps. Pretty ridiculous for him to come down with 3 catches, over 60 yards and 2 touchdowns in his first collegiate game, on 8 snaps. That's some pretty ridiculous, pretty ridiculous production. Another guy I want to call out, my guy, Deion Colsey, forgotten man in the wide receiver shuffle, over the summer. There were some reports out there that were saying, he was going to get left behind and yada, yada, yada. Well, you know what? All he did was go out and make plays. And when he catches the ball, he usually either gets a first down or a touchdown. And that happened on 2 of the 3 catches that he had. Again, on Saturday, he had the nice catch and run, for the 25-yard touchdown. And he had another nice first down. So good on Deion Colsey for, just getting out there and making the most out of the snaps that he had. He just makes plays. I don't know if he's maybe, and I think there actually might be a question about this now that I'm going on a rant about it already. You know what? Maybe he's just not, doesn't look good in practice and just looks good in games. But, I got to give him credit. Last year it seemed like when Notre Dame needed a big third down, they can go to Deion Colsey, and he got it. And it looks like Sam Hartman is going to be able to do the same. And I think the reason, all these receivers were able to have such great production on limited snaps is because we now have a quarterback that can get them the ball. No disrespect to the quarterbacks Notre Dame's had over the last, couple of years. Last year specifically was not a great year of quarterback play for Notre Dame, but it has been a while since Notre Dame has had a quarterback who's going to be able to do the kind of things that we're seeing Hartman do, already. He didn't have a perfect first game, but nobody expected him to. He's still working on timing with some of those receivers. Again, I know there's questions on some of that, so I'll wait to get into that. But he spread the ball around. Notre Dame, I actually wrote in my 5 things that I liked article that Notre Dame not completing a pass to a tight end was a big time positive, in this game. I know it broke some streak that nobody, that most people didn't know existed until we found out that it was snapped. But if you think of the over reliance that this offense has had on the tight end specifically, or Michael Mayer specifically over the last 2 years, to go out, put up 42 points, have a quarterback throw 4 touchdowns, and you didn't have a single completion to a tight end, I don't take that as any, indication that Mitchell Evans or Holden Staes aren't going to be able to produce in the passing game. I take it as Notre Dame just didn't need him. They have a quarterback now who's looking for his receivers, who's able to hit them, and who's not just locking in to one player and then going there if they're open or not, and just hoping that they make a play. So that was my biggest takeaway, from Sam Hartman and the passing game in this in this first game. While we're talking about the passing game and the receivers, you know, specifically. I know there's a little bit of angst right now amongst Notre Dame fans, you know, across Twitter and on some of the forums and things like that about, you know, Tobias Harris not coming down with a catch. I am not worried at all about Tobias, you know, Merriweather not coming down with, you know, with a catch in this game, because I saw what Hartman can do with the other receivers. He was targeted. Excuse me. He was targeted. He just didn't, you know, didn't come down, you know, with either catch. The near touchdown was probably, and again, I know there's questions on this, so we'll get into it in more detail later, was not necessarily, you know, Merriweather's fault. So, you know what? I'm not worried. If we get to the Ohio State game and Merriweather still does not have a catch, then, you know, maybe we're, you know, we got something to worry about. But at this point, I am not worried, you know, at all. But just take another big sip there. So again, I mean, we could go into the stuff that was, you know, like it was just a long list of things, you know, that there were to like in that game. I think if I were to hone in on areas that maybe wasn't thrilled with, and, you know, hope, you know, we see maybe different outcomes next time. Yeah, the first one that comes to my mind, and I know it's days later, but I don't agree with having Audric Estime in the game against Navy in the fourth quarter with the lead that Notre Dame had. I understand the rationale. You know, he had the fumble in the first quarter, or sorry, the first half. Freeman took him out. Freeman confirms, you know, his absence there in the first half was related, you know, to the football or to the fumble. So he's holding him to the standard. But, you know, he already had some carries in him, you know, after that in the, you know, in the third quarter. And it's like, he is too valuable to this football team to risk hit an injury with Notre Dame up 39 points in the fourth quarter, you know, against a team, you know, like Navy that has their backups in at this point, who aren't, you know, weird stuff happens when you get all the backups in the game. You get guys who are not used to playing. You get guys who, you know, don't get a lot of opportunities. They're all geeked up, you know, and just weird stuff can happen in those instances. So I get the teaching moment for Estime. I just don't think it is worth the risk. And if there's another scenario like that this year, I'm going to again hope that Estime is not in the game at, you know, at that point, right? I don't know, man. They make him run the stadium stairs, you know, after practice, make him carry a football around campus, like in the program, and make sure that he's the one that brings it back to us. Do that. I mean, but don't put him in the fourth quarter when you're up 39 points. Too valuable, you know, especially when, you know, when you're playing teams that are not, you know, that are not Navy. So, we'll see if that happens again. I mean, hopefully Estime does not fumble, you know, like that again. It was an issue last year, so it is a concern. Like, don't get me wrong. It's not, I'm not suggesting that Freeman or, you know, anybody should just kind of, you know, brush it off. But, you know, there's a time and a place, you know, to make that point. And to me, making that point when you're up that many points against Navy is probably not that time. That said, you know, good on Freeman for keeping even, you know, the starters, you know, living up to the standard. I will give him that. But like I said, you know, like I don't know. It's not. There's been too many injuries in Navy games, you know, in my lifetime of watching Notre Dame football for me to, you know, not be holding my breath when I see the star running back, you know, in the game. In such a, you know, in such a, you know, an instance, that was not the most, you know, the worst part of that game for me. The worst part for me was still NBC's coverage, which was just woof. I mean, there were very few aspects of that coverage that I could look at and just go like, yeah, this is top notch. You know, broadcasting, which is wild to me, given, you know, the investment that NBC has in Notre Dame, in football in general, in sports in general. So, I mean, let's start with the cameraman. I get it. Option is tough to, you know, to cover with the camera. There's a lot of motion. There's a lot of misdirection. You know what? You know, it's tough to follow. But, man, that cameraman didn't know where the ball was when Notre Dame had the football. Notre Dame's running, you know, they're not running. They weren't running crazy misdirection. They weren't running crazy, you know, flea flickers. There were plays that it was tough to know what happened because the cameraman was just so far out of, you know, out of position and so fooled. Which I can't remember, you know, that happening to that extent in, you know, in a Notre Dame game, you know, very often. Let's hope. I know there was one game, and this is where it'd be great for Greg to be here, because Greg would be like, Frank, there was that game. There's that game last year, and I can't remember what it was. You know what? It might have been the Gator Bowl. It was the Gator Bowl, and that wasn't NBC. There we go. See, this is where Greg could have corrected me, and now y'all had to hear, you know, my inner monologue externally through the mic. But that's what came to mind. The Lorenzo Styles touchdown that we got very few, you know, good looks at in the, you know, in the Gator Bowl. That was that all day long in the Notre Dame Navy game. And then there is Jason Garrett, who is just comically bad at commenting football games. It really makes sense now, like why the Cowboys were as bad as they were, you know, while he was their head coach. And you know what? I'm not even going to apologize to Cowboys fans because you all know I can't stand the Cowboys. Bring back Jason Garrett, actually, although not like Mike McCarthy is a whole heck of a lot better. But he just zero awareness for what is going on in a game. Like, and if that's how he coached, like, whew, no wonder. Like I said, the Cowboys were terrible while he was the head coach. But, you know, I pointed out a couple in an article I wrote, but like, I mean, the one that really got me was end of the first half. Notre Dame's driving, you know, trying to score late one more time. Hartman throws a little screen over to, now it's escaped me. It was either Ford or Payne, basically to the line of scrimmage, maybe even a little, you know, behind the line of scrimmage. They catch it down immediately. Clock is running. And Jason Garrett goes, oh, you know, Hartman, you know, with the check down here and gets the completion. And now he's got a third and manageable and he's given his team a chance. And I was like, dude, they literally gained no yards on this play. If anything, that ball should have been thrown in the dirt and you would have saved like 15 seconds. It'd been Jason Garrett sitting there like, oh man, you know, there we go. This was a good play because now you got a chance to get it on third down. And it was like, made no mention of the fact that the play actually went for 0 yards and Notre Dame lost about 15, 16 or whatever, you know, seconds of play clock. So, you know, great job, Jason Garrett. You know, astute observation. If that wasn't bad enough, though, later in the same drive, again, Hartman is scrambling. He's scrambling to his right. I think he had Ford, you know, potentially for a touchdown. Looked like Ford maybe even had a little, you know, some escorts into the end zone. And the ball hits, you know, the side of the Navy player and goes incomplete. Okay, you know, no big deal. But then Jason Garrett is sitting there going, he's, oh man, Hartman's lucky that one was deflected. It's like, how was he lucky that one was deflected? If it wasn't deflected, Ford catches it and scores an easy touchdown. And it's just like, how? I just don't understand how somebody who has seemingly, you know, been in the game of football as long as Jason Garrett has can watch and just not understand that context. That's just like one. I know some fans are bent out of shape because, you know, it seemed like Garrett was cheering for Navy, and it's like, I don't care about. Fine, and whatever. We sat through, you know, Doug Flutie cheering against Notre Dame, and it is what it is. Like, who cares? That doesn't bother me, you know, at all. And I honestly think Garrett is just like, you know, Mr. tries to be like Mr. Pep Talk and just gets like excited for, you know, for everything. So that doesn't bother me. But it's just like the bad football analysis, it just bothers me. It's like, dude, just how? How are you that bad at it, right? It's like Navy's driving at the end of the game, and he's like, you know what? I don't know if Navy's going to be able to come back in this one. I just don't know, but... they're putting a drive together here, and it was like they were down at that point. I think it was 35-0. Okay, like really, like yeah, you think, and you're at, like, it was like at the end of the third quarter. It's like do you really think they're not going to come back here, Jason? Come on, man. Ugh. And the fun thing is, we get that for every home game this year. All I'm saying, Mike Mayock was great. I know some fans didn't like him. I personally loved Mayock because he was so, analytical in how he broke things down. He was a BC guy. Could care less about that. Would love it if he came back, into the booth and replaced Garrett, because he is just absolutely brutal to listen to. And we're gonna have to do it again this weekend because it's. It's the home opener, and it's another NBC game. So great. Can't wait to hear what kind of gems we get, coming from him this week. Let's see. Outside of that, looking back at my notes here, the other thing that I have actually that I was going to mention is on a positive, I guess you could call this a positive note though, is that, I really don't know what we can take away from the Notre Dame defensive performance, in that game. Like, on one hand, pretty happy that, obviously Navy, after the weirdness in the beginning, which happens every Notre Dame Navy game, Navy gets a couple good runs early. Notre Dame's defense is like, okay, now we're used to what they're doing. We're good to go for the most part, is how it generally happens in these games. But it's like, it's Navy. Notre Dame's not going to see anything like that for the rest of the year. So I don't know how much we could take away to know, is the defense better in year two of Golden? I mean, obviously they played Navy a hell of a lot better since they didn't let Navy score or whatever it was, like 19 unanswered like they did last year, and, kept them off the scoreboard until the very end when Brian Newberry decided to kick a field goal down 42 points, which, good on you, dude. You avoided the shutout. It was way less embarrassing to lose 42-3 than it was 42-0. But Dino Babers, gives you a round of applause for that one. But and speaking of Newberry, like I think we might like him as Navy's head coach, because he just made some not smart decisions. It was his first game as the head coach, it was a big game. So, maybe he gets better, but, he didn't look, that promising to me. So, I think we might like him anyway. Defense, I think the linebackers, they played pretty well against the option after a not great start. I think, the end result was better, but the start out, I did not think was very good from the Notre Dame linebackers. And then, second, third, fourth quarter, they obviously played much better. But I think it's still wait and see to know, what this defense is going to be capable of. Specifically the pass rush, it's like, Navy temp like 6 passes. So, I mean, we don't really know if they're going to be able to, to replace, the Foskey's pass rush and, and things like that. But, all in all, it's a pretty positive game. It was great to see. I think maybe the biggest, negative for me was just not being there for this one. And for circumstances now, 2 times in a row, just not working out for me to get there. So I'm hopeful, that Notre Dame's there again, and in what, 8, 9, whatever, however many years, because my little guy will be old enough to enjoy that and to appreciate it. And that'll be some kind of trip. So hopefully that's the case. I know Freeman already said, in his post-game comments, he would love to come back. So, and obviously Notre Dame's going to want to get back there. So we'll see how, how quickly they can make that happen now that they're doing the yearly Aer Lingus, college football classic. But great job, at least from afar, to those crews too, for just putting on a great event. Everything looked top notch. All the reviews, from folks, who had went were glowing in that, that they did it right. So looking forward to hopefully going in the future. All right, let's talk briefly about Tennessee State, and then I'm going to get into the questions, and then we'll put a bow on this one. But obviously, interesting game, first FCS opponent for Notre Dame in history of the program. I know there's some fans who are all upset about that, and blah 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 blah. And it's like I don't know if you've listened to this pod by now, times by now, that kind of stuff just like doesn't bother me. I just really don't care that streak is ending. Like, nobody gave Notre Dame credit for it, so why should we care that it's ending, right? Even before the FCS streak ended, everybody outside of Notre Dame fans, well, Notre Dame's got a cupcake schedule every year. They play the service academies. Like, blah, blah. And then you'd say, like, yeah, but Notre Dame's never played an FCS school, and you had the SEC scheduling, Furman and the Citadel and all these schools, in October, November, when Notre Dame's playing, real games. And Notre Dame never got credit for it. No, nobody was like, oh, cool, good on you, Notre Dame. You never scheduled an FCS team. So it's like, if you're not going to get credit for it, who cares that it's ending? So the way that Notre Dame did it, I think was, has been, pretty well done, with it being, Tennessee State, having Eddie George, having Eddie George, as the head coach, and with the Ohio State connection with Marcus Freeman, obviously pretty cool. I think it's pretty great to see Notre Dame, having that first FCS opponent be an HBCU. I think that's a really cool angle, of this game. So like I said, I know there's folks upset. I am not one of them at all. So, I think if anything, it's more, I'm looking at it like, well, I hope this to be an interesting game, because it should be. We're playing an FCS school, so I'm hoping this one is also over by halftime, just like last week. So in terms of like just overall enjoyment, those games are not as fun, right? It's like when you're watching and you're like, okay, this was cool. Notre Dame's up 42-0. Okay, great. It was fun to watch, obviously, but it's like that should happen this week. It should be even worse. Like Notre Dame should be able to be up, score more than 42 points, this week if they really want to. And if they want to get some work done on the offense, I think, they should. But at the same time, it's like, okay, yeah, those are ones that you're like, all right, that was fun. But, now you're just kind of looking forward to, to the tougher games. But, I think in terms of, things to be worried about this week, the only thing that really worries me is, just the team coming back with jet lag. 'Cause I still remember, what happened in, 2012, if you remember how bad Notre Dame looked against Purdue the week after that Dublin game. And, Freeman has said, they did things, they're doing things a little bit differently. I mean, just the fact that that game ended so late and the team came home the next day versus, coming home the same day, as the game, since, that, I forget what time that one kicked off in 2012, at something like 8 o'clock local, or 7:30 local or something really, really early. So maybe it was 8 o'clock local. Anyway, I think they've done enough to mitigate it. I know Freeman on Thursday said they tweaked the practice schedule a little bit, and they had the best Wednesday practice he can remember. But I mean, what else is he going to say? He's not going to say like, oh, we had a really bad practice, I'm worried this team, might come out a little bit lethargic. But that's really, to me, the only worry that I have coming into this one, and hopefully it's they've done enough to, like I said, to mitigate that, and we'll see a pretty crisp performance from the team. But it's something to watch. If they come out and they don't look the sharpest in the first quarter, like, I'm just saying, don't freak out. If it lingers into the second quarter, maybe freak out then. But just give it a little bit of time, and remember, Notre Dame needed Tommy Rees coming off the bench in that Purdue game to save the day in 2012. So we'll see what it looks like this time around. Other than that, I'm intrigued a little bit about what Freeman said about not wanting to give anything away, and what kind of offense and what kind of looks Notre Dame might come out in. Like, obviously Notre Dame does not need to do anything exotic against Tennessee State to win this game. They could do the same thing they did last week and come out in 12 personnel most of the time, run it a lot, throw it when they want to, and just kind of run a base offense and score a lot of points and call it a day and get some backups in, get some, get some more reps for the second and third strings, and everyone's happy. They can do that. Freeman said, though, we might see some things this weekend that we hadn't seen. So, obviously that means, I interpret that as some things offensively, and it's now the question, though, is one, will they, or is it just coach speak? And if they do, is it things that they want Ohio State specifically and some of the other teams to know that they can do, so they have to prepare for it? Or is it things they legitimately want to work on? Because again, I this is not the kind of opponent that you really have to, pull out any stops on. It's just, you come out, run your base offense, and, away we go. So I'll be intrigued to see how much they do or don't show, because I would hope that anything that they show this weekend that is interesting or maybe new wrinkles is stuff that they're putting out there just so Ohio State prepares for it and accounts for it and is actually not anything that they want to run against Ohio State. Because it makes no sense to show anything, in a game like this, unless you want it to be known. So I'll be intrigued, to see what exactly, Freeman was referring to. Outside of that, I'm going to look, the timing between Hartman and his receivers probably could have been a little bit better last week, even for as good as he was and as good as the passing game looked. So I am going to be hoping, looking to see that. I'm going to be hoping that Merriweather gets the ball, a little bit more. Actually, I would like to see, a little bit better usage of Chris Tyree as well. But if there's one thing that the opener taught us, is that Notre Dame has some weapons this year, folks. Yes, it was just Navy. I get it. But, Tyree, we've seen him make big plays, throughout his career. We know he can do it. Now we've seen Greathouse score a couple touchdowns. We're seeing Deion Colsey, make big plays. Merriweather had the long touchdown last year, so we know he's got it in him. We saw them dial it up, dial one of those up specifically for him. So it's like, okay, and we got, Jaden Thomas. We know who could make some plays, as well. And then you got five running backs who all saw carries. So there's a lot of players on this offense that can make some big plays for Notre Dame this year. So it's going to be fun to see, each week, who it is, who they have plays dialed up for, specifically, each week. But Tyree's one, I think, and maybe I really just want to see him make some big plays just because I love the fact that he's still at Notre Dame. And in today's college football, it would have been very, very easy for him to transfer and not look back and just go somewhere and, be like, well, no, as a running back for 3 years, I'm going to go somewhere and be a running back. But, he made the switch to receiver You know, despite except playing running back the last 3 years, he's not the go-to receiver. But he's just been, you know, by all accounts, outstanding teammate, outstanding representative of the university, and I want to see him have a good year. So this is the kind of game where too you could probably, you know, you could probably dial some things up for those kind of players that you want to, you know, that you want to reward. So I'm hoping we see Tyree with a long touchdown this week. Defensively, I'm going to be looking. I will be looking at the pass rush, even though, again, I know it's going to be tough to judge against an opponent like Tennessee State. Notre Dame should be able to get pressure whenever they want. But we didn't really get to see it too much last week against Navy, given they rarely pass. So I will be interested to be to see what Notre Dame has in store there. Similarly, the offense, though, again, this is one where you don't necessarily need to dial up your biggest blitzes. I hope, actually, I will say, after last year, if Al Golden's listening, I hope he calls, one or two safety blitzes against Tennessee State, so Ohio State, when they review the game film, knows that those are still there, so they prepare for them, and then I hope Notre Dame never runs them ever again based off of last year. But other than that, like I said, pass rush, I'm going to see, if the linebacker play, carries over from last week to this week. And I'm going to be interested to see what happens at the safety position, because it felt like last week DJ Brown got a lot of run because of his experience against the option. And I'm going to be interested to see how the reps, at least and especially in the first half, are split at safety this week. And if they are split up similarly, because I just feel like in watching it, like maybe they don't. Maybe they shouldn't be. Ramon Henderson, and Xavier Watts should be getting more of those snaps. But we'll see how that one plays out, as well. Other than that, this is one of those games that you just kind of hope everybody gets out of it, healthy. Notre Dame gets a good win, and you get to back up some snaps. I really, really, really want to see Steve Angeli throw a football this week. I don't care about running up the scores, anything like that. I want to see the backups get in, and I want to see the backups get a chance to play. And actually, not just come in and hand off the ball. So I'm hoping we get to see, Angeli, attempt a few passes in the second half, because the game is already in control, and we don't have to worry about, we don't have to worry about things getting interesting. And with that, I think I'm going to move to questions, because we got about 10, so I'll probably spend a few minutes on these. Like I said, this game is not one that I think requires a whole lot of analysis. We all know what to expect. We all know what should happen. The only question is whether or not it actually will happen. So, all right, let's jump into the questions. So, first question from a friend of the pod, Chris Scheiber. Chris says, the Tobias needing to show it narrative has been beaten to death. However, as a team, doesn't Notre Dame really just need Colsey and Merriweather combined to provide plays on the outside? It can be either or game to game, and on this particular Saturday, Colsey provided the big catches. You know what? It is a good point. I would say in 9 out of 12 games this year, sure. In 9 out of 12 games this year, Notre Dame only needs one of them to really, provide plays on the outside. I think when you get into Ohio State, USC, and let's assume Clemson's better and Notre Dame's not just going to be able to bludgeon them again this year, because I just look back at that game and still surprises me sometimes, but let's assume that they'll be better. You're going to need both outside receivers. And you're going to need, at times, four wide receivers on the field, against those teams, to put up enough points to be able to beat them. So while I don't, like I said already, I'm not worried about Tobias, in terms of, last week being any sort of indicator of, he didn't progress the way we hoped. I think it's a blip, and I think you're going to see him have, bounce back, possibly as soon, as soon as this weekend. But I do think it's critical that Notre Dame's got Colsey, Merriweather, Thomas, Greathouse, and Tyree, all to a point by the end of September, when Ohio State comes to town, that all of them have now shown that they are weapons and need to be accounted for. So, but I get your point. And yes, Colsey provided the big catches last week, and I think he's going to continue to do that. I think what they're going to need, and what we didn't really see, is other than Greathouse's touchdown down the seam, is you didn't really see the big play. You didn't see Notre Dame dial it up where they went, where they went for bombs early, for a, 60, 70, 80 yard type play. And that's where Merriweather, I think, comes in, and he needs to provide that for this offense when Notre Dame's playing Ohio State and USC. So I think you need them. I do think you need them both. So that'd be my answer to Chris here. Next up, we got Robert Helicki. Robert, I hope you enjoyed all of my references to the Dallas Cowboys, because I know how much you enjoy the Dallas Cowboys. And know how much you probably did not like Jason Garrett when he was the head coach. So I hope you appreciated that. But Robert's question is, what will you guys consider a good Saturday? Given the opponent, I only hope to score a lot and have no injuries. Did the win and play from Sam Hartman change your outlook on the season? Okay, so it's kind of a two-parter. Good Saturday, I think I already outlined kind of what I'm looking for in terms of a good Saturday, and it's right in line with what you're saying, Robert. Put up a lot of points, no injuries, get your backups in, get some opportunities, for them to develop. One of the biggest, outside of the record last year, one of the biggest misses of the entire season was not getting enough blowouts against the teams that you should have blown out, so that you didn't get a chance to develop your younger guys. And Notre Dame did a pretty good job of getting younger guys in against Navy. There were still a few who didn't make their debuts, who I'm hoping we'll see this weekend. Thinking of like a Drake Bowen and a Jaden Osbury, specifically on defense, who didn't get into the game. But I want to see more of those players get in. This is the kind of game where if you have players here, like, I don't know if they're going to play every game, if they're going to play more than four games, freshmen, it's like, get them in, give them an opportunity, to get some reps now, in the knowing that, that maybe they won't play past the four games, because this should be one that you should be emptying the bench for. There's no reason for you not to empty the bench, in this game after you build up a big lead. And, in terms of, the play from Sam Hartman changing the outlook for the season, no, I wouldn't say anything I saw Saturday changes my outlook on the season, because I was already pretty bullish on Sam Hartman. And if anything, I think like what we saw against Navy was kind of like it's very expected. Like, I mean, nothing that he showed, I was like, oh, I didn't expect this from Sam Hartman. If anything, I was like, oh, this is kind of like right in lines with what I was hoping, we would see. And if anything, I thought maybe, we would have even seen more. So I wouldn't say that it changed my outlook on the season, at all yet. We'll see what happens, the next few weeks, if he keeps racking up four touchdown games, maybe. But like I said, I was already pretty high on this team to begin with. So not yet, nothing yet that I've seen that, that changes the outlook on the season. All right, next question comes from our good friend, Chris Jenkins. Says, most impressive things you saw from the offense and the defense. All right, let's see. So, I mean, I think I already mentioned some of the, I'll repeat, I guess, kind of what I had said, you know, kind of early on. I think one of the most impressive things I saw offensively was just the production out of a lot of receivers, even when there was not a lot of volume, you know, for them to be productive. You know, the whole Notre Dame doesn't play freshman receivers narrative took a big hit on Saturday because, you know, not only was Greathouse in and did what he did, but Rico Flores played, you know, as well and got a catch. I mean, he didn't have, you know, the 3 for 68 and, you know, and 2 TDs like, you know, like Greathouse had, but he still got in and he played, you know, quite a bit. But I think that was probably the most impressive thing for me was just both he and Colsey just did so much damage with just with so few snaps. It's impressive, you know, to, you know, when you get out there and you have limited opportunities to, and to make the most of them. So good on both of them, you know, for what they were able to accomplish. Most impressive thing that I saw defensively. You know what? I mean, I think I would go, let's see, what would be the most impressive thing defensively? You know what? I think I'm going to go with, most impressive thing I think was Javonte Jean-Baptiste playing as well as he did, given, you know, his reputation was, you know, he's a pass rusher. He's not necessarily going to be the one that you have in for run defense. And, you know, maybe, you know, he's your, you know, somewhat a replacement for, you know, for Foskey, but he's maybe not your every down, you know, defensive end. But it's like, he played pretty damn well against Navy. And it's like, he wasn't seeing the triple option at Ohio State, you know, every year, like Notre Dame's defenders. I mean, he was the second highest graded defender on the defense, according to PFF, with a 77.6, you know, rating. And his run grades were better than his pass rush grades, which is what, again, the reputation was that he was a better pass rusher. And the reports out of fall camp, you know, kind of said that as well. So I was very impressed with what I saw, you know, from him, just because I actually, coming into this game, based on everything I read, everything I had heard, I thought, you know what? We might not hear much from him yet this game. We might hear from him down, you know, down the road more. And then he had himself, you know, I thought a, you know, a really good game. So good on, you know, on him for, you know, for that. Very encouraging, you know, too, for the rest of the season, knowing that he was able to do that against Navy. Other than that, I mean, I think also Josh Burnham flashing was really cool to see. I mean, we got 14 total snaps and he picked up a sack, you know, with, you know, in limited opportunities. So that, you know, those two things come to mind. And honestly, I mean, Maris Leifau being the highest graded defender was also impressive, just because he did not have a good 2022 season. I think everybody knows that. So, you know, him coming in at an 82.5, and again, having a good tackle rate, good coverage rate, everything grading out, you know, very well. He was one of those linebackers I was alluding to who I think in the beginning of that game was maybe playing a little bit more, you know, reactive. And then, you know, he really started to play better in the second, third, and fourth quarters. So those things all stood out to, you know, to me on defense. All right, next up is our buddy Oscar at Vamos Irish, asks, when is the last time you were held accountable to the standard a la estimate? Man, I don't know. I don't think I could tell you the last time I was probably held to that standard. But, I mean, that also requires being, you know, as good as, you know, as estimate is at his job. But, I like to think I'm actually that good in my day job too. But, I don't know, like, I don't know, probably, like, I mean, I'll say, you know, probably my son who routinely tells me no, when I'm like, hey, can I read to you instead of mom? No. It's like, okay. All right. Fair. I realize I'm not mama. So, I mean, probably him. besides your family, who is the Holden stays in your life that you'd give up your first class ticket for? For those of you unaware, Sam Hartman gave up his first class ticket because the starters got to sit first class on the way home. He gave it to Holden stays. So besides your family, yeah, that's a tough one. I would say, I am going to take a page out of Hartman's book now. And if I'm on a work trip in the future with someone on my team and I get bumped up to first class and they do not, I'm going to give them my ticket. So that's who I would say. It would have to be somebody on my team though that reports to me, not somebody who doesn't report to me. That'll be my answer there. Next question from Oscar. Tennessee State is in Nashville, home of hot chicken. What's your hot food take that's related to chicken? I would say hot chicken is amazing. It's so good. When I say it's good, I would say, the legit stuff in Nashville. There's another hot chicken question, so we'll get to more details of that in a little bit. But my hot food take is thighs over chicken breasts any day. I slept on the chicken thighs for far too long because I bought into the hype that they're just so much worse for you. And I get that they're not as good for you as chicken breasts. They're not as lean. They're a little fattier, a little more calories and whatnot. But man, I slept on them for a long time, and now it's like almost all I get when I buy chicken and I cook it because I'm really OCD with chicken. I'm one of those, I gotta wipe the counter off like 16 times after chicken has been on it. So, I like the fact that you could overcook thighs and they're not dry. That's the best part for me. So thighs over chicken breasts all day. Next up, Clutch Sports says, Clutch Sports Notre Dame says, we saw improved linebacker play. What should we attribute that too? Year two under Golden, Max Bullock, Golden himself, or something else? Maris Leifau seems to be on an Asmar Bilal route. Will Maris have a bigger positive impact on his team than Asmar during his breakout year, which was 2019? So I'm going to go ahead and say I think it's still a little early to put that there. Although, man, remember how bad the Notre Dame linebackers looked in that Louisville game to start the 2019 season? It was like, oh, it's going to be a long year for this defense if these linebackers are this bad. And then all of a sudden they all turned it around, Bilal specifically. I would say I probably want to see more out of Leifau before I really get too hyped up, because I got very hyped up about Leifau in 2021, and it was very, like, everybody, bummed out last year when, it seemed like that injury kind of lingered into last year, and he just wasn't as effective as everybody was hoping. So I'm going to wait. I'm going to wait to buy, to buy in. In terms of, improved linebacker play, I think, all those guys now, again, they finally had some continuity in defensive schemes. Having three defensive coordinators in 3 years is a lot, to go from, Clark Lee to Marcus Freeman to Golden, and to have Golden, 2 years in a row, and 2 years in a row against Navy in the same scheme. I think I'm gonna chalk it up to that for now. And let's monitor the situation though and see how it continues for the rest of the year. Next question from Michael Muto, at Michael Muto, Greg's good friend and co-host of their untitled Notre Dame and USC podcast. He's got a great question. It says, if Sam Hartman were a beer, what type of beer would he be? Ooh, I was thinking about this, for a while, for longer than I probably should have. And, and Brendan from 1 Foot Down at Very Piratey had a great response to this. And he said a KBS bourbon barrel aged stout. I'm assuming a nod to the fact that, Hartman's in his sixth year, but which is pretty good. But I would say, I was thinking of it, and it's like, he's got like He's got the mullet. Yeah, he's got the beard. So it can't be anything too, you know, too like craft, you know, craft beer. So I would say something, you know, kind of like either Pilsner-y or lager, you know, lager S. And I think I'm going to go with something. I think I would say something like a Shinerbach, you know, like it, because Shiner's a pretty solid beer. It's, you know, it's made for the masses, but it's also, it's like a step up from your, you know, from your normal mass produced, you know, mass produced beers. But that's kind of my thinking here, at least in terms of what kind of beer, you know, that he would be. But great question. I thought when I saw the name come through, I thought it might be a snarky one, you know, based on other questions Michael sends us. But that was a great question. So that's my thought process there. Next up, we got Drew Brennan at Drew Brennan 77 says, "What do you think of Hartman's long balls in the game? Seeing the Merriweather pass and Greathouse TD pass were both a little underthrown. Where were you at all? Hopefully we see some more good long throws this weekend." So I saw this question, Drew. Great question. So I kind of alluded to this as I was answering and talking through some other things earlier in the pod. But, you know, timing just seemed like a little off. You know, first game with new receivers. So I'm going to chalk it up, you know, to that, as they work on their timing. The one in Merriweather specifically looked like, you know, maybe they called it in too short of a field and, you know, Hartman just kind of ran out of field, and waited just a little too long, you know, and then ran out of field, you know, with the throw. I get you on the Greathouse TD, you know, if there was better, better defensive back in coverage who looked, that could have been intercepted. Like if we're being honest with ourselves, that could have easily been an easy an interception with a better defensive back. But even the touchdown to Jaden Thomas was just like a hair, you know, behind. You know, he had to kind of, you know, like almost, you know, turn himself a little bit and catch it more on his shoulder than out in front. So I think it's just timing. And I think, you know, the more they play together, the better that is, it is going to be. So I'm not worried, you know, at all. And like you, I also am hopeful that we see some long ones, you know, this weekend. Next up, we got Andrew Callen says, you know, "Does Colsey's playing games make you think he's from the Allen Iverson school of practice? High variance player or something else?" So love the Allen Iverson, you know, reference. Y'all know, make any Philadelphia sports reference and it's going to be near and dear, you know, to my heart. And, you know, Andrew, come on, man. If you listen to the pod, you know you didn't need to also follow that up with the Allen Iverson video. Of course, I was still, you know, I was living in Philly still. And I was in school actually in college. Cause if any of you all listen, you know, I'm Subway alum. I went to Drexel University right in Philadelphia. And I was in school when that happened and lived the whole Allen Iverson, you know, experience. But, I think it could just be that he, you know, in practice, you know, just needs the lights on. Some players are like that, right? And it's like, I know coaches hate it because, like, I have to reward the players who practice hard, but it's like, you get him in the game and he makes plays. So I like players who make plays. Let's get the players who make plays on the field more and watch them make good plays. I think that's a good recipe for success, is to get the players who make plays to make plays. Just do that, and we're all going to be happy. So, two more questions. We got Woj. At Woj to God says, "It's 42-0 at halftime. Do you give Angeli and Minchie second half snaps?" Absolutely. The entire second half goes to both of them if they're up 42-0 at halftime. He just said, next question, it says, "Hot chicken, Memphis-style barbecue, and moon pies for game day food." I don't know if he means like all three of those, but yeah, please. Like, especially the hot chicken. Like, and here's why. I knew there was a second hot chicken reference, so I figured I would wait for my rant on hot chicken for the second one. But what really annoys me now is like all these other places who are trying to make like a hot chicken sandwich or like we got our Nashville hot chicken. It's like, I don't know why, but nobody outside of Nashville makes hot chicken as good as Nashville. And stop putting Nashville hot chicken on your menu if it's not anywhere close to as good as what I can get in Nashville. It's like putting Philly cheesesteak on your menu when you are not in Philadelphia and your cheesesteak is terrible. I don't understand. I do not. I for the life of me understand why you can't get a good cheesesteak outside of the Philadelphia, you know, region, because it's very simple ingredients. But cheesesteaks just suck outside, you know, outside of the greater Philadelphia area. So just like Nashville hot chicken, every single time. I like now have started to avoid ordering anything on any menu anywhere that says Nashville hot chicken, because I'm like, it's going to suck. Because I don't know why. Nobody else can recreate it. But Hattie B's Nashville, now I'm hungry. So that's my food rant, you know, for this pod. But one more question. We have Joel. At Voluntary Joel 41 says, let's pretend Eddie George isn't an FCS coach, because that's probably the main reason Tennessee State got this game, but Notre Dame was still going to schedule an FCS team. What FCS team would you pick for this game and why? I mean, the first one that came to my mind was Holy Cross. And I think maybe it's just because I follow all the 1 foot down guys and they love the, you know, the Holy Cross Crusaders. I also work with some folk who, you know, who went to Holy Cross. So that probably, you know, is why it, you know, came to mind, but that was the first one that, you know, that came to mind, you know, for me. So with that, I think I am, this is going to be just, I mean, maybe we'll top a little over an hour after I close this out. But we're right under an hour. And you know what? I know we're going to top an hour because I forgot we got a review. And I should have read this in the beginning. So that's on me. But we got a review. It's our first review since November 10th of last year. This is from Shwezibu. Says, football season is a go. Love the pod. 5 stars. You know what? I love the 5-star reviews. So give the 5-star reviews. We're going to read them. We still have a perfect 67 out of 67 5-star reviews. So we appreciate y'all for leaving those reviews. Leave some more. We will continue to read them. I'll try to remember to read them in the beginning because that's when I'm supposed to read them. That's on me. That's on me. So with that, I'm going to wrap this one up. We're going to check in just over an hour now because I rambled here for a little bit at the end. You all will be happy to know, if you're still listening, which, truth, good on you and thank you. But you'll all be happy to know that, that Greg and I made some arrangements so that we are a little more consistent with our in-season pods. And I think we're going to try to be recording Sunday night so that Monday morning you all are commuting in. You all are sitting down at your desk if you work from home. And you're going to have a fresh, hot single. You're going to have some fresh, hot takes from the Single High Notre Dame Football Podcast on the weekend's game and a look ahead. So look forward to those. As always, thank you all for listening. Thank you for submitting your questions and leaving those reviews. And as always, go Irish.